Right, morning. Today's daf in Shabbos is daf Yedalin. Okay, we start with a Mishnah. The Mishnah on Yud Gimel Amud Beis. Eloin halachos. I missed an important letter. The Eloin halachos Amar Balias Chananya Ben Chizkiyah Ben Garon. Shalul Levakro Nimre Verabu Beishama Beisilum Ilov Yurches Dvarim Gazru Babayom. These are from the halachos, or the letter that I missed is, and these are from the halachos that were stated in the attic of Chananya ben Chizkiah ben Garon. They went to go pay him a visit. Apparently he was sick, and they had a vote, and Beit Shammai overruled Beit Hillel, and they established 18 gzeiros, 18 rabbinic enactments on that day. Now, the first thing the Gemara does, it was just go through the first part of the Gemara of Amar Le Abayla Rav Yosef Eilu Tanan O Vi Eilu Tanan. So in other words, when I read that Mishnah, and we started off with an introduction to Yud Ches Davar, to the 18 enactments. So how is the Mishnah supposed to be read? With a Vav or without a Vav? So the Gemara goes over both possibilities. Eilu Tanan O Vi Eilu Tanan. Vi Eilu Tanan Hani Damaran. Meaning, is it V'elu? And it's a reference to everything that we mentioned above. Meaning, lo yafles kelav, a person shouldn't delouse his clothing by a fire. And lo yikra lo aner, or a person shouldn't read lo aner. And that's what we're referring to. Oh, elu tanan de be'in lamemer, come on. Or are we talking about elu, meaning the ones coming up? So tashmain pol lo aner, ve'in korin lo aner. So the Gemara says that the correct way to understand the Mishnah is V'elu with a Vav, that it's not only going on the ones coming up, but it's still going on the ones being discussed in the past as well. So, and the Gemara is going to go through all 18. So in other words, our Mishnah that we discussed previously about not delousing and not reading Lora and Era, that's two of the 18 of the Yud Ches Davar, the 18 enactments that were made in the attic. Tanu Rabbanan, Mi Shekas of Megillas Tanis. Mi Kas of Megillas Tanis. Who wrote Megillas Tanis? Megillas Tanis is a, I guess we can call it a braisa. Yeah. But in other words, it was a list of various days that took place throughout the calendar where the Jewish people received some sort of salvation. And depending on the degree of salvation, so you weren't allowed to either eulogize or fast or both. So this is what's called Megillas Tanis, right? The scroll of fasting. It's funny, I know. Megillas Tanis, the scroll of fasting. It's like the scroll of not fasting. But okay, in other words, it was a list. Now, what days made into Megillas Tanis? So the obvious ones are Hanukkah and Purim, right? That ones you know about. There are other days that made into Megillas Tanis, most of which we're not familiar with, because we're just, in other words, the Gemara has a discussion. Where is it? Okay, it'll come to me. But Batla Megillas Tanis, meaning that we no longer subscribe to the days of Megillas Tanis. It's in Rosh Hashanah. Okay. So, Mikas Megillas Tanis, so Amr Chanai Mechizke V'siyatosha Yimechav Nesatzaros. So, it was Hanani ben Chizkiah and his assembly who were mechavavin asatzaros. Now, literally, that what that means is they loved the misery. That's how it literally translates. Meaning, not that they loved the misery, but the Yeshua, the salvation that comes from the misery, that they really appreciated. Amr Shimon Gamliel, afan mechavin asatzaros. Meaning, look, we have a lot of misery, and if we were to write every time that we got saved from some sort of issue that we have, every day would turn into a yantav. Now, another way to say it is einshota nivka, meaning, you have somebody who's really not knowing what's going on, right? He's ignorant to the world around him, so he doesn't even know that he is that he's in any type of danger. Or another way to say it is that if you have dead skin and you cut dead skin, so you don't even know that it's getting cut. Meaning, if you're so desensitized So you don't even feel it. Ini va'amar Rav Yitzchak Kasher Rima lameis kemach ba'basar achai shenemar ach basar alav yichav nafsho alav teyavel. So the Gemara asked a technical question. What do you mean? Your dead body is going to feel the pain, so to say, of being buried and the Rima and Tola'os. So So the Gemara says, fine. So what it means is that before you have any type of cut or excision or incision, but if the area is anesthetized, so you're not going to feel it. So the Gemara says that's kind of like where we are right now, meaning that we're so dull. Our senses are so dull, like we don't even feel it anymore. So, okay, so in other words, we needed them to write down all the days that we experienced the Yeshua, and that is Megillas Tanis. So, we have an assembly up in the attic of Hananya ben Chizkia ben Garon. So far what we have established is the following. In this assembly, in this attic, so we have now established that they established Yud Ches Davar, the 18 rabbinical enactments. We're going to go through them inside in detail. That will be how we're going to be spending the next couple of days together. Today, Daf Yudalid, tomorrow, Daf Tezvav, Daf Tezayin. Okay, so three days together, more. And part of Daf Yudzayin as well. Okay, next 3.5 days together, we're going to be spending going through the Shmona Asar Davar, the Yud Ches, the 18 enactments that were made in his attic. We are also now saying that Megillas Tanis was written in his attic as well. Megillas Tanis is a list of days which we experience salvation. On these days, we're not allowed to fast and we're not allowed to eulogize. Again, depending on the degree of salvation that we experienced. And by the way, and also the day before and the day after as well. And as we're about to learn in just a moment, there was something else that was accomplished in the attic of Hananya ben Chizkia ben Garon. And that is the following. The Gemara continues. Amar Rav Yonah Amarav, Baram Zachar Oso Ha'ish Latov. Every time he mentioned his name, so remember him for good. Hananya ben Chizkia Shemo. And his name is Hananya ben Chizkia. Shem Aleihu Nignas Sefer Yecheskel, Shayudvar Sosin Devei Torah. Because had it not been for Hananya ben Chizkia, so we would have taken Sefer Yecheskel and we would have put it in Geniza. It would not have made it into the Sifrei Tanakh. There would not have been 24 books of Tanakh. There would have been 23. Okay, we would have taken it out. Now why? Shayu Dvar Sosin Divrei Torah, because its words contradict the Torah. Me'asu, or Me'asa, Halol Gimel Maos Garbi Shemen, V'yashav Ali V'darshan. So what they did is, they took up 300 barrels of oil into the attic of Hananya ben Chizkia, oil for the purposes of illumination, and says Rashi, a little bit of salad dressing, and he sat down and he darshened the psukim in Yecheskel, in Sefer Yecheskel. Now, what's so controversial and problematic about Sefer Yecheskel? So I'm going to give you one example, which by the way, Rashi right here on the daf provides, but when you hear it, it's going to really be jarring. It's the Haftorah for Parshas Emor. Okay, so that's a while from now, but Haftorah from Parshas Emor is Perek Mem Dalid of Sefer Yecheskel. Thank you. Perek Mem Dalid of Sefer Yecheskel. I go to the last pasuk of the Haftorah. So when you get to Parshas Emor and you read the last pasuk of the Haftorah, this is just one example. There are more. It says, Kol Nevela V'Treifa Min Ha'Ofa Min HaBehema. Any Nevela and Treifa from birds or from Behema, Lo Yochlu HaKohanim. Kohanim are not allowed to eat it. Right. Now, the clear implication of that pasuk is, Kohanim are not allowed to eat it, but the rest of us, so no problem.
Was it talking about Kohanim before, or no?
Yeah, I mean, it was all talking about Kohanim.
So maybe that's... it's easy to...
But still, it's strange.
I know, but if you're talking about Kohanim, he's not talking about that. Yeah.
Okay, so that's but one example. So, and by the way, how does... on this one example, so what does... What did Hananya do? Meaning, how did he... How do you handle this pasuk? So he said beautifully, because you know that when a kohanim get a bird, so what do they do to the bird? They do something called malika, which means that they're going to take their thumbnail, insert it into the back of the neck of the bird, and that's the way you shecht a bird in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, if I were to do that same action outside the Beis HaMikdash, not for a bird which is kodesh, but for a bird that's just a regular bird, what is to become of that bird? It's a nevela. So the Kohanim may make the following argument. Well, in the Beis HaMikdash, I'm allowed to do it. I guess it means that for me, it's okay for me to eat a bird which is nevela. I guess it must be. So outside the Beis HaMikdash, he's going to be thinking to himself, I'm allowed to eat nevela. So what the Pasuk in Yecheskel is telling us, telling the Kohen, is no. In the Beis HaMikdash, you're only allowed to do Malika because that's special for the Beis HaMikdash. But once you're outside the Beis HaMikdash, so then you conform to the regular rules of Shechita, which means that you're not allowed to do that with birds and animals outside the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? That is just but one example of the problem of Sefer Yecheskel and one of his solutions to that problem. There are more out there. Okay, so so this is an important attic. Meaning, so in this attic now, we are going to go through 18 rabbinic enactments, which we're going to get to see in just a second. We're starting in just a moment. We also, he revived Sefer Yecheskel, which was considered to be put into Geniza. And he said, no, I can explain everything. And he does. And the last thing that he gets credited for is authoring Megillas Tanis, which is a list of days which the Jewish people experienced the Yeshua. And therefore, not allowed to fast on those days. By the way, when do you live? So it's during the time period of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Because it's clear from the Mishnah, meaning Nimnu Verabu Beis Shammai al Beis Hillel. Meaning it was there that the vote took place between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, and Beis Shammai overruled, outnumbered Beis Hillel. Okay. Yeah, meaning Beis Hillel had to capitulate to Beis Shammai.
On 18 things.
Right. Shmona Asar Davar Gazer, my name is Shmona Asar Davar. So, and here we begin. Okay? And we are now going to get involved in the world of Tuma and Tahara. Okay? Now, it's interesting because this is the same thing's going to happen in Pesachim right around the same daf. You want to call it a coincidence? You want to call it more than that? I don't know how to say this. But when we get to Pesachim, you get to Daf Yudalim Pesachim, like the Gemara goes into a full blown discussion of Tuma and Tahara. Now, I know right now we're learning Seder Moed, and Seder Moed is not where we normally discuss Tuma and Tahara. There's another Seder for that altogether. But because the Mishnah mentions it, so now the Gemara will not want to lose the opportunity of discussing it at length and in great detail. So we get to, for the next 4 days of Daf Yomi, discuss in real detail the world of Tuma and Tahara. I'll try to be clear. I'll try to, every time I go through it, I find that I understand it better and better. If this is new to you, the world of Tuma Tahara, you're going to, you'll understand, but in other words, with limitation. And then just the more times you hear and the more times you say it, it really, in other words, if I can get it, I feel like anybody can. So my name is Shmona Asar Davar. So what are the 18 enactments that were enacted? Did none. So we start with a Mishnah. We're going to learn together a Mishnah in Zavin. Zavin, of course, is in Seder Taharos. And this Mishnah goes through, now not all 18, this Mishnah only goes through about half of the 18. And they are the following. Eilu Posam, Mr. Truman. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to read through the Mishnah quickly. Because what the Mishnah does is the Mishnah just kind of rattles them off. The Mishnah doesn't give any explanation whatsoever. And what the Gemara was going to do is the Gemara is going to go step by step through each one of the things mentioned in the Mishnah, and we're going to get an understanding of A, what is the Gzeira, and B, why did they make the Gzeira. So I'm going to read the Mishnah quickly, and then we're going to go through it one by one. You want to keep score. It's going to be a little bit tricky, because as you're going to see in the Gemara, over today's Gemara, some of them mentioned in the Mishnah we're going to just simply take out. And you're going to understand why as we go through the Mishnah. So I wouldn't recommend numbering it as we go through the Mishnah, but in other words, but you'll get a sense of what they are. So number one, ha'ochel ochel rishon va'ochel ochel sheni. So if I eat food which is a rishon, or if I eat food which is a sheni, v'hashos demashkin tamein, or if I drink liquid which is tamei, v'habarosh v'ruba b'maim she'uvim, or if I put my head and the majority of my body under drawn water, v'tar shenafla rosho v'rubo shosha lugin, or if I have a tahor person who three lugin of drawn water fell on his head and the majority of his body, v'hasefer, and any sefer, v'hayadayim, and your hands, V'hatvul yom, and the tvul yom, meaning somebody who was tameh, told them the mikvah is now waiting for nightfall. V'ha'ochlim v'akelim shenitmu b'mashkin, both food and kalim that became tameh through liquid. Period. That is the Mishnah in Zavin. So that Mishnah in Zavin rattled off could be 10. Okay, again, in terms of the exact number, you'll see it's going to be a little, it's going to be somewhat of a moving target. But let's say about 10 various gzeiras that were enacted. And now, essentially, what we're saying is these gzeiras were enacted in the edict of Hananiah ben Chizkiah. Now, obviously, these are not all 18. These only represent about half of them. The other half are going to be discussed over the course of the next 4 days. Okay, so now we're going to go step by step, one by one. We're going to go through each one of these that are mentioned in the Mishnah and Zavin. Mantana ochel achrishan va'ochel achusheni mifsa pasle tamoy la matme. So we're dealing now with gzeiras numbers 1 and 2 in the Mishnah. If you eat a rishon and if you eat a sheni. Okay, the very basics, we've gone over this a number of times, and the more you hear it, the more you'll just simply get it. You know that you only become a person only becomes tumah if he comes into contact with an ava tumah, with a source of tumah. Now, a source of tumah can include and will include a sheretz, right? The Torah goes through eight crawling items. Crawling items. crawling bugs. That if you touch them, you're going to become tameh. Sheretz, by the way, only gives off tumah through maga, not through masa, not through ohel. Another category of tumah is, let's say, nevela, carcass of a dead body, a dead animal, I should say, that didn't receive a proper shechita, or shechvat zera, or a zav, right? The discharges from a man, or for that matter, the discharges of a woman, or a woman who becomes a nida. So these are all now also a source of tumah. And so if a person makes contact with any of those, he becomes tameh. When I say man, by the way, in the world of tumah, there is no segregation. There's no difference between men versus women. It's all going to be the same. And a mace and the dead body. Now, the dead body itself is not the best example because the dead body is not an avatumah. It's more than an avatumah. It's what's called in the world of tumah, navi avosa tumah. Right, literally translated as the granddaddy of tumah, yeah, but
for Jewish body and goy body, or just
a non-Jewish body gives off tumah as well. What is only up for discussion and debate is whether a non-Jewish body gives off tumah to ohel. But in terms of tumah, they all give off tumah. So the dead body is an avi avosa tumah. So what's an avi tumah? Someone who touches a dead body, that's what's called tumas mace. So when you touch a dead body, you now are an avatumah, you're a source of tumah. And now you touch another person, you touch a kli, that is going to become tameh. Can you imagine the proliferation of tumah now? Meaning all you need is someone to touch a dead body, and now any person or any kli that he touches is going to become tameh. Obviously, tumah is very easy to proliferate. So these are all now an avatumah. An avatumah is going to be mitameh, either a person or a kli. That person or kli now that becomes tummy through an av is what's called an avlad hatumah. A vlad hatumah translates as a derivative of tumah. So now that person or kli that comes into contact with the av is now simply a vlad, a tolada. It's the first daf of Baba Kama. The first daf of Baba Kama notes that in the world of tumah, an av and a vlad are not equal. They're not equal. And the difference between the two is very simple. When it comes to an ava tumah, it can be metame adam v'kelim. When it comes to a vlada tumah, it cannot be metame an adam and a kli. So that means that if I have a kli that becomes tame and it's only a vlad, so it can't. That kli cannot become adam, or it cannot be metame adam or kelim, not man or any utensil. Good. Very basic difference between an av versus a vlad. Now, even in the world of vlados, so here's what we do. We count. What does that mean, we count? So let's say, for example, I'm an avatumah, okay? Which, by the way, happens to be correct. I came into contact with a dead body. So now I'm an avatumah, and by the way, not just contact, meaning just being under the same roof. Mm-hmm. So that would make, maybe to exception to Kohanim, All of us now in Avatam. So now I touch this kli. Now this kli over here happens to be styrofoam. So in terms of its susceptibility to tumah, it's a chemical product. It's not a natural product, so I don't know. But in other words, just for the purpose of example and argument, let's say this kli is mekabel. It does in fact receive tumah. Okay, let's say it's wood. Let's say it's metal. Metal is a terrible example because metal has the same degree of tumah as the person who touches it. So let's say it's a wood kli. It's a lot to know. So if this is a wood kli, that means that this kli now that I just touched is now a vlad. But we're going to be more specific in identifying it. It's not just a vlad of tumah, it's a rishon. Meaning, I didn't change it. In other words, it's still a vlad, but in the world of vlados, we get to count. Well, you'll see by example. So now that this cup is a rishon, what's the liquid inside? So inside I have now, waiting for me, an excellent cup of coffee. That cup of coffee now is a sheni. Okay? You see what happens every time we transfer tumah from one to the next, it goes down. Now, this cup of coffee is chulin. It's not truma, and it's not kodesh. So now, this cup of coffee, now, first of all, before I get to the cup of coffee, the cup itself, which is the rishon, the cup right now is sitting on top of a table. Okay, so there's contact between the cup and the table. Does the table become tummy? Absolutely not. Because the cup is only a vlad. The vlad is not going to be mitame the table. Because the table is a kli. Ain kli mitame kli. One kli cannot be mitame the next. The vlad is not mitame kalim. What if I touch the cup? Well, I'm already tummy, so it's not a good example. But if I were in tummy and I touch the cup, I don't become tummy because the kli is only a vlad. The vlad's not going to mitame me. The only thing that a vlad can be mitame is ochlin and mashkin. Only foods and liquids. They're the only things that can become tame with contacting a vlad. Good. So now the cup is a rishon. The coffee inside is a sheni. Let's say I pour this coffee onto cake or a donut. Does the donut become tame? No, it doesn't. Why not? Because in the world of chulin, as long as we're not talking about truma, and as long as we're not talking about kodesh, sheni is the last possible stop of tumah. It does not go beyond a sheni. Okay? Good. These are the very basics of tumah and tahara. Now, what if I take this cup of coffee, which is a sheni, and I pour it onto truma? What happens to the truma? Because truma has more kedusha, truma therefore has more susceptibility to tumah. The truma now will become tameh. But now we've gone over this before in the daf. Let's say it over again. When that truma becomes tummy, we're going to use a word, not truma, but we're going to use a different word to describe it. It becomes puzzle, disqualified. Now, why are we using the word puzzle as opposed to truma? Because the truma only can become a shlishi. It doesn't go beyond a shlishi. If that truma were to come into contact with another truma right next to it, the truma right next to it becomes unaffected. Because truma only goes to shlishi, doesn't go beyond shlishi. Is there anything that can go beyond shlishi? Yes. Carbon. Anything which is kodesh, which is a carbon in the base of mikdash, because it has even more kedusha, now can go even one step more susceptible to tuma, it can become a revi. So in other words, I can have the coffee touch truma, the truma now is a shlishi, the truma can be touched carbon, the carbon is a revi, and that's it, ad kan. By the way, another example we could use is I could have the coffee come onto kodesh. That kodesh now is a shlishi. That kodesh touches another kodesh. That kodesh becomes a revi. Everyone got the very basics? It comes out now that if I drink this cup of coffee, do I become tame? And the answer is, of course not. The coffee is a sheni. Even if the coffee was a rishon, I wouldn't become tameh, but if the coffee here is a sheni, I don't become tameh. Watch, observe. Right, you see that? I didn't become tameh. So the keen observer. Now, yeah, I'm already tameh. So the first enactment that we're going to learn together of the Yud Ches Davar is the following: that mid the Rabbanan, I just drink sheni, I become tame. That's it. It's that simple. The why, we're going to get to later on. Right now we're only at A. For every one of the Yudches Davar, there's two questions to ask. The what and then the why. What is the enactment? And then afterwards you can understand or try to understand the why. But first the what. So if I drink that, I don't become Tameh. I'm sorry. The enactment is I do become Tameh. Now first of all, how much do I have to drink? So before we get to drink, let's talk first in food. How much food do I need to eat? So it's much more than a kezias. It's even more than a kebetza. It is chatzi pras. Chatzi pras comes out to be, three or four eggs. Okay, it's a significant amount of tummy food that I need to eat. Okay, so let's go over it now inside. Ha'ochel, I'm on the last two lines of the Amud. Ha'ochel ocharishim ha'ochel ocharishim mifsa pasle temuye lo mitame. Now in our Mishnah, not our Mishnah, the Mishnah in Zavin, if I eat food which is a sheni, if I eat food which is a rishon, I become pasle, which now means that I become a sheni. Me, meaning me, the person, I become a sheni. And mifsa pasle, which means that what can I do? I can pasel truma. You see the terminology? Meaning that the truma will become pasel, which means that the truma is a shlishi. But temuye lo mitamu, top of yudala medalef. But I'm not going to be mitame the truma. Meaning that if I touch truma after I ate the tame food, the truma is not going to be a rishon, the truma is not going to be a sheni. At best, the truma is only going to be a shlishi. Amar Rav Abba Bar Chana Rav Yoshua he did not. So Rav Abba Bar Chana says that the Mishnah in Zavin conforms to the position of Rabbi Yoshua. We get to learn another Mishnah together. Mishnah is out of Taharos. Rabbi Elazar Omer Ha'ochel Ochel Rishon Rishon. Va'ochel Ochel Sheni Sheni. Va'ochel Shlishi Shlishi. Rabbi Elazar has a very interesting opinion, and it is basically you are what you eat. You are what you eat. If I eat a rishon, I am a rishon. If I eat a sheni, I am a sheni. If I eat a shlishi, I am a shlishi. Rabbi Yoshua Omer, Rabbi Yeshua disagrees with Rabbi Eliezer, and he says, no. Ha'ochel ochel rishon va'ochel sheni, sheni. If I eat either rishon or sheni, I become a sheni. And shlishi, but if I eat shlishi, now think about it, I'll say it again. If I eat shlishi, what does that mean, I eat shlishi? I'm not a Kohen. So what would I be doing eating shlishi? So you'll say to me, oh, must be talking about chulin. Can't be. Chulin only goes up to a sheni. So what is the Mishnah talking about when the Mishnah says, and if I eat shlishi? So maybe, perhaps the Mishnah is talking about a Kohen. Perhaps. Doesn't seem that way. Meaning the Mishnah is making a very general statement regarding the Jewish population. So stay tuned. Well, I'm going to answer that question in just a second. Shein lekosh, vein shein lechuma b'chule. I'm sorry, that's already the answer to my question. Vein shein lechuma. So if I eat a shlishi, so there, vis-a-vis kodesh, I am going to be a sheni, the kodesh is going to be a sheni, but ain't sheni lechuma, but not vis-a-vis truma. Now, what? That last line is very confusing. Essentially, what it means is as follows. Let me read the next line of the Mishnah. B'chulin shenasu al taras truma. And we're talking about chulin, which is nas al taras truma. Okay, so let's go. Let me explain. Or let me try to explain. I'm not a Kohen. I'm not going to be eating truma. In fact, I'm prohibited from eating truma. Fine. But it's possible that I could take upon myself the following. You know, all chulin that I eat, I want it to be tahor. Let's say, give you a simple example. Let's say I have a son-in-law who's a Kohen. Okay? Or I have a father-in-law who's a Kohen. But in other words, I just want to get into the habit of eating all my chulin in a state of tahara. In fact, I'm taking upon myself that all my chulin is going to be nasis al taharas truma. That I will treat my chulin as if it's truma. Can a person do that? Yes. His chulin now is going to have the status of truma. So that means then that his shmira, his degree of protection and care of his chulin is going to be on the same level of truma. So for his chulin, he will protect it so that does not only is it going to not be a sheni, he's going to protect it so it doesn't become a shlishi. Very good. So for this person over here, so it's possible now, it's possible that his chulin can become a shlishi. And so for this person over here, if he eats a shlishi, so now, as vis-a-vis his truma, well, he was careful and he safeguarded. So in other words, that's the last line that we just read. The shlishi, if he's shlishi, sheni l'kodesh vein sheni l'truma. Meaning, vis-a-vis his truma, he was careful, he was protective of it. But he wasn't protective about any type of kodesh. Therefore, because he ate shlishi, we really don't know what degree of truma that he ate. We consider worst case scenario, which is that perhaps he ate a rishon, so therefore, vis-a-vis kodesh, any kodesh that he comes into contact with is going to be a sheni, vis-a-vis kodesh. Okay. That last part was a little bit tricky.
You saw him eat shlishi, so you assume he must be rishon too.
Right. In other words, he simply had, vis-a-vis kodesh, he had no shmira whatsoever. So we assume worst case scenario. Okay, but meanwhile, okay, so that's the what. So in other words, the Mishnah Zavin tells us that if I eat a rishon or a sheni, I become now a sheni, meaning me, my person, my body has now become a sheni. That is minatara that would not be. That's one of the enactments of the Yud Ches Tavar of the 18 enactments. That's the what. And now we get to ask question number two. Why? Why did the rabbis do that? In other words, if minatara, I'm not tame, so why did the rabbis make me tame? So the Gemara goes on to discuss the why. Ochel rishon ve'ochel. I'm sorry. Ochel ochel rishon ve'ochel ochel sheni. My time gazer be rabbanan. Toma. Good. So this is the Gemara's question, and the Gemara says, "I'll give the answer." The zimnin de'ochel ochlin tamein v'shakal mashkin de'chuma v'shadilu pumei upasalahu. I'll tell you why. Because here's the story. Because it may very well be that sometimes I'll eat food which is tamei. And the food kind of gets stuck in my throat. So quickly, I need to wash it down. Now, truth of the matter is that this scenario which we're about to describe is not going to work for me, because I'm not going to wash it down with truma. Okay, good. So really, we're talking about the Kohanim. And so, after the Kohanim eat food which is tamei, which, by the way, the Kohen's totally entitled to do. Meaning, there's no isser about eating food which is tamei. There's none. So the Kohen's now going to eat food which is tameh. Either it's going to be a rishon or it's going to be a sheni. It gets a little bit stuck in his mouth. So therefore he's going to wash it down. He's going to quickly take wine, which is truma, drink the wine to wash it down. Now when the wine's in his mouth, so that truma wine now is touching tameh food, the food could either be a rishon or the food could be a sheni. What's going to happen to that wine? The wine is going to be tameh. So what the rabbis did as a safeguard to protect the sanctity of truma is they basically said, not only to the Kohanim, but think about now how encompassing this gzera is. Not only to the Kohanim, but to the entire Jewish people. I don't want you eating tamei food. And if you eat tamei food, even if the truma is only even a sheni, you will become tamei. Your body will become tamei. And the reason why the rabbis did that is to safeguard and to protect the sanctity of truma, to the eventuality that perhaps when the Kohen eats tamei food, he's going to want to wash it down with a glass of truma wine, and that when the wine now enters his mouth together with the food, that wine becomes tamei, and the Torah says, "Ushmartem es mishmarti," meaning we have an obligation to safeguard and protect the sanctity of the truma.
What happens with a regular person, not Kohen? So he becomes a Tamei. What is he?
The solution is very simple. He tovels in the mikvah.
So he cannot come to the Beit HaMikdash and also.
Yeah, he won't be able to come to the Beit HaMikdash. Midrabanan, but still, you're correct.
He has to wait until sundown.
So that's an excellent question. That is not discussed in the Gemara, Oh, I saw that. I saw that in prep. Huh?
He has to wait.
No. No.
Because it's a Rabbanan.
It's a Tumah de Rabbanan. Oh, I saw that in my preparation.
Is that similar to...
Yeah.
Ezra's
yes, Rashi. Rashi on the previous Amud.
All right.
Rashi on the previous Amud. On Yud Gimel Amud Beis. If you want to see the Rashi inside, it's towards the bottom. And I'm just going to go to the punchline. It is the first mid-sized line on the Rashi. Hanach l'tumas gviya dalav daraisa. Umatzasi b'sefer arach mishuna tumazumi tum'a daraisa. This tumah is different than tumah daraisa. Disayile b'tfula l'tumah dalabai harav shemesh. You don't have to wait till sunset. Very good. D'tanya b'sifri, and he quotes the Sifri that speaks to this as well. Ein ocha ochlin tamayim v'lo asho samashkin tamayim tamay tumas erev. Okay, very good. So he just tovels in the mikvah. And immediately, upon emerging from the mikvah, he's tahor.
Is that Ezra's...
No, this is not Ezra. This is not Ezra.
Because, no, I'm saying because Ezra was... Is that the same?
It's Ezra made a separate...
Balkari
has to wait.
Why? Because it says the Rabbanan too, no?
Correct. But this is even a further the Rabbanan. I mean, right, as the Gemara just explained to us, think about this first one. Meaning, I can't, in other words, I'm going to become tummy if I eat Rishon or Sheni food. Why? Well, in the eventuality that if a Kohen were to eat it, followed with then washing it down with Truma, and that Truma is going to touch the food while it's in his mouth, because once it's in the stomach, it's not going to become, obviously won't make it tummy. So when it touches it in his mouth, so therefore it's going to be tummy. So because of that, so therefore the Kohen's going to be tummy if he eats Rishon or Sheni, and I'm not even ever going to eat Truma. But I'm going to become Tameh as well. So in other words, it's not a weak Gzeira. In other words, it's a Gzeira. And, you know, in other words, we know Beis Hillel argued the Gzeira. But eventually they agreed to it. So, okay. Anyway, that was Rashi on the previous summit. Okay, I'm so happy you reminded me of that point. Okay. So, I'm sorry. Well, I just skipped a little bit. I apologize. Back to the Gemara now. So that's Ochel Rishon and that's Ochel Sheni. Good. Shosem Mashkin Tameim. If I drink liquid, a drink, which is Tameah, I will be Tameh. So my time, Gazabe Rabbanan Tama. So the Gemara says, okay, now you want a reason for this? Okay, spoiler, it's going to be the same. So here's the story. Because what's going to happen is I'm going to drink truma, and in order to wash down the drink, I know that sounds funny, but to wash down the drink, what may happen is the Kohen's going to take truma food, put the truma food in his mouth to wash it down, but the truma food now is touching the tummy liquid that's in his mouth, and so therefore the truma is going to become tummy, or better said, pasul. And so therefore, the rabbis made a safeguard, don't drink tameh liquid. And if you do, you become tameh. Now the Gemara says, now, Hainohach, did you just see what we did? It's the same. Meaning, right. Don't eat tameh food, because you may wash it down with truma. Don't drink tameh liquid, because you may wash it down with truma. It's the same, Hainohach. So So the Gemara says, basically, yeah, it's the same, but you know what I might have thought? It's normal to wash food down with liquid. It's not normal to wash liquid down with food. That's not normal. I might have thought that the rabbis would not have made the secondary gzeira, kamash malan, that they did. Now, we're up... Washing liquid down with food is strange. As the Gemara says, it's lo shchiach, and I may have thought that the rabbis would not have made such a gzera, and that's the chiddush. The chiddush is they did. In other words, Aaron, if we were to work backwards, once we have this gzera, I certainly would have known about the other gzera.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Maybe the food is too dry.
Yeah. Habar rosha veruba b'mayim she'uvim. Now we're up to another gzera. Now you got to, in other words, reset. In other words, we're on to a new gzera. So again, it's what and why. So what is the gzera is, and then why? So what the gzera is that after having gone to the mikvah, so what do I do? Now, as Rashi describes, the mikvah is disgusting. Meaning, it's not a new phenomenon, it's a very old phenomenon. And of course it is, because what are we talking about? We're talking about water that's collected into a pit, the water is stagnant, there's no circulation, and then somebody tovels in the mikvah, and somebody else tovels in the mikvah, and, you know, you get the idea. Okay, in other words, it's, yeah, I know we joke about it, but it's just the natural phenomena of stagnant water. It's going to get a little bit disgusting. So now you come out of the mikvah, so you are pure, but you're dirty, right? So what do you want to do? So what you want to do is you want to take a shower. So what the Chachamim made as a gzera is that don't take a shower after you go on the mikvah. Now, I say take a shower, please understand, I'm not rendering psak halacha for now a days. I'm just describing right now what's going on in the Gemara. In terms of the psak about taking a shower after going to the mikvah, another place, another time. Even though it is related to our Gemara over here. The
Chassidim don't shower. The old Chassidim used to go and they never shower.
That's so and why not? My time. So now that's the what. So the what is don't rinse yourself off with collected water after going to the mikvah, even though you're going to be tempted to do so. And by the way, if you do, you become tummy. Now, my time of Gazrabe Rabban and Tumah, now that's the what. Now, why? Amarabibi, Amaravas, you should be tchila, you told them, Bemei Ma'aros, Mechunasim, Visruchin, Vayunos, and Alayam, Maim Shuvim. So the Gemara describes, because they went into the caves, the water there was disgusting, it was collected and disgusting, and so afterwards, what did they do? Is they then threw drawn water on top of them, Maim Shuvim. Drawn water just simply means water that was collected into a clean, which no longer can be used for a mikvah. It's unfit for a mikvah. He's chilav asim keva. Now, gazru aleim tumah. So what happened is people didn't understand what was the actual mitahir. What created the tara? Was it the mikvah or was it the post-mikvah bath or shower? So my keva, amra abai shayu amrim lo elu mitarin ela elu ve'elu mitarin. So the way Abai explained it is that, you know what people thought? You needed both. So Amalei Rava, my nafkamina. So Rava says, if that's what people thought, great. Meaning, so in other words, people will say to themselves, oh, here's what I need to do. I need to go to the mikvah and I need to shower. Okay, so Rava says, look, they're not right, but no, there's no loss. So in other words, if someone wants to tire themselves, so they'll go to the mikvah and they'll take a shower. Okay, what's the big deal? Ella, so the Gemara says, and you probably saw this coming. Hakatavle b'hanach. Ella, I'm sorry. Hakatavle b'hanach. So Ella Amar Rava Shayu Amrim Lo Elu Mitarin. Ella Elu Mitarin. What people walk away with the misunderstanding is that, you know, here's what I noticed. People went to the mikvah and then they took a shower. I bet the mikvah is not what does it. I bet it's the shower that makes people tahor. Why? Because everyone's showering after the mikvah. Must be that the shower is really the mitahir.
Because it was won by Beit Shammah, right?
Yeah. Is it established? Yeah. In other words, this is one of your chesdom.
So why people take shower afterwards?
Okay. Give me a little bit. I will address that. Not today. V'tar shenaflu arosh v'rubo shlosh shalugim ma'im she'uvim. So the Gemara now goes over the next one, which is that not after you tovel the mikvah, but in other words, you took a shower. Meaning, you weren't even tamei. You just simply woke up in the morning and you took a shower. You're now going to become tamei midrabanan. So the Gemara says, "What? My time at Gazru Bei Rabbanan Tuma. Di loha halo kaimaha." So he says, the Gemara says, "You know what this was? A gezera to support a gezera." Now I know we normally say in Gozer gezera l'gezera, but that's not the point over here. Meaning that without the secondary gzera, the first gzera just wouldn't be able to take hold. In other words, I need this gzera in order to make the previous gzera. So it's kulachara gzera. It's really all one of the same enactment. So in other words, in terms of our accounting, we call this one, we call this two. That's why I told you the numbering is a little bit tricky. Okay. The sefer. Now this one's an odd one. You touch a sefer. Now when we say a sefer, we certainly mean sefer Torah. Nevi'im as well. Up for discussion and debate. You touch a sefer Torah, you're going to become tamei. Now that's odd. I mean, just in other words, in of itself, think about it. A Sefer Torah, which is Tashmishi Kedusha, meaning you can't get anything holier than a Sefer Torah. And meanwhile, if I touch it, I become Tameh. Right? The irony is amazing. So obviously, it begs the question, my time, why? So let me just finish this one. So my time goes Rabbi Rabbanan Tuma, Amar Bishar Shesh Betchila Ayu Matzian Sa Ochlan Tuma Itzel Sefer Torah, because. Okay. The Bas Kol has told us that we have two more minutes, so we're good. So people, what the Kohanim used to do is the following: when the Kohanim would store their Truma, so they say, "Where's a good place to store my Truma?" So the Kohanim arrived at the following conclusion, and it's a pretty good one. I'll put it right next to my Sefer Torah. Of course. Because, and the Gemara says it beautifully, V'amru hai kodesh v'hai kodesh. Because look, my Sefer Torah is kodesh, my truma is kodesh. So I'll just simply put the two together. Came into kachaz, the castle of the Epseda. However, here's what happens.
Nice.
Is that, you know, we have pests in our house. Probably right? Does. And so it's not a new problem, it's an old problem. And so what happened was the rats and the mice would come and pick at the truma of the Kohen, because they got attracted to it. And if it was stored right next to Sefer Torah, so they're going to go ahead and affect the Sefer Torah. So Gazu b'Rabbanan Tuma. So the Chachamim said, you know what? We're now going to declare that a Sefer Torah is going to be a source of Tuma. So basically, we're now telling the Kohanim, don't store your Truma next to the Sefer Torah.
What level?
So with all these things, it's a sheni. So that means that when the Sefer Torah touches the Truma is a shlishi.
Because it's the Rabbanim.
Yeah. Okay, now, the Hayadayim. Mimnesha Yizam Askanios. Now, hands are Askanios. Now, Rashi says, this has nothing to do with Tumah Tahara. Now, Rashi does quote one of his Rebbeim, who says it has to do with Tumah Tahara, but Rashi strongly disagrees. Rashi says as follows. It's very simple. Your hands are dirty. Meaning, your hands are all over the place and your hands get dirty. So without washing your hands, now let's say you're a Kohen and you touch Truma. Now you look at the Truma and you're like, look, this is, I understand I'm supposed to eat it, but yuck. I mean, for lack of a better term. Yuck. So in other words, what the Chachamim therefore demanded is to the Kohanim, we want your hands to be clean. Literally, not spiritually, we want your hands to be clean. So therefore, as a gzera, as a way to encourage the Kohanim to get their hands clean, the Chachamim slapped a Tumah Derabanan on the hands so that they would make sure to wash their hands every time they eat Truma. Tana af yadam abas machmas sefer posos es a Truma. All right, you know what? We'll stop over here. Okay, tomorrow we pick it up. Okay, we are only beginning. Please come again tomorrow as the next couple of days as well. I mean, the more you hear this, the more it starts to sink in.